Don't you sometimes feel that this is the kind of life we were meant to live on this earth? Everything we need, everything, right here, right at our fingertips. You know, if only people could have all this and be satisfied, I don't think there'd be any real problems in the world. Father Robinson, in the 1960 classic film, Swiss Family Robinson. Solve the World, a fictional adventure told in 100 episodes. Episode 91, Children of Eden. Nates and Petra tried to wake her as their boat drew near the fortified island. The convulsing stopped. She wasn't breathing. Nates carried Jen's body, lifted her over his head. As the boat boomed just outside the large wooden walls of Eden, Petra screamed,
"Help! Help us! She's not breathing!"
This was predicted, prophesied. Known, at least in part, 2 weeks ago. But Aaron Amaru didn't say anything about her not breathing. Alexandra Keitel ran, in leaps and dashes, against the shoreline current, towards her friend. Jen and Lex were inmates once before.
"What's wrong?"
Lex yelled as she trounced through the surf.
Overdose. Nates blurted.
"Poison!"
Lex yelled something back at the shore. A teenager, a strapping young lad, responded in turn by sprinting into the woods with fierce intensity. "Give her to me." Nates handed over Jen's lifeless body into Lex's arms. To the beach. The strapping young teenager returned, his hands full of a dark substance. Lex held Jen's mouth open. The boy poured the substance in her mouth. Soot. Ash. No, not quite. Coal. Ground up coal.
"Agua."
One of the younger ones, a girl, probably 8 years old, hovered with a coconut with a leaf on top. A water spout. Lex wasted no time tipping the coconut over and pouring water into Jen's mouth. The whole family, minus Aaron, was now venturing out for a view. The boy, the young lad, was working on Jen's stomach. Lex was blowing in Jen's mouth.
"Come on. Come on. Come on, old girl. Come on, Jen." It took a week for Jen to get her strength back. Lex stayed by her side almost the whole time. Nates and Petra, once informed by the family that Jen would recover, started to investigate their new environs. The investigation didn't take flight for long. Rather, it transformed into something much more beautiful. Curiosity. Almost in an instant, the world around them, just a few days ago, a world that they felt they had a firm, boring grasp of, now seemed mysterious. Regular questions arose, like, which berries are good to eat, and which are puke berries? Of course. But there were also questions that one would perhaps suppose that they should already know the answer to. How exactly do pulleys work? How do you sterilize the water here? In this Eden, Nates and Petra were children again. They laughed and played. Smiles wore on their faces like sunshine.
Not a pretty picture. We're drowning all our fevers in the waters of the Neva, with Saba and with Boris.
Drowning in the Neva.
The sun of revolution is giving off pollution. Is there redemption for us? Redemption for us.
Redemption for us.
Is there redemption for us?
Redemption for us.
Atticus continued to write on his blog, even after the third worldwide event was in full tilt. The internet, knocked out by the dark clouds, the fog, the dense mist, whatever you want to call it. Nevertheless, he still wrote, just to write, just to continue. His words are as follows. What is it? What is it? How do I make sense out of this? God descending? In some ways, I believe it. It must be. Because the answers are all questions. That's the truth. I have to repeat it to myself these days, these short days. The answers are the questions. Nonsense is the highest art. I tried to look into the sky. I walked out my door into the sunless day. I stared up at nothing. In silence. For hours. When I was weary, I sat. And stared. I was hoping. Hoping beyond blooming hope that God would descend. That he would come out of the clouds and call me home. I was hoping to be raptured. I was hoping beyond bloody hope that he'd call me home and explain to me how everything is the way it was always meant to be. He'd tell me how this is the only way the story could ever end, the only way that everything could come all together. And I would see, with clear eyes, for the first time, how I fit into this mad puzzle, and I wouldn't have to hope anymore. I could just be. I'd know the story, and I would rest. This, whatever it is. I think it is God. It fits him, or her, whatever. It. Because God has proven himself to love confusion above all else. He loves chaos. And just as soon as you think you get it, whammo. Something new. No, not new. Something old. Comes new, and throws salt into your eyes. We've always been blind. This moment, for all of us, just makes the metaphor real. Realer. A few days later, he wrote this. My wife can't understand why I don't want to go. Why I'm not one of the travelers. That's what they're calling them now. Did you know? Sonny, at the grocery store, told me that. Said everyone that goes calls themselves by that name. Traveler. Well, I've traveled far enough. The answers to the questions they have won't fill them. It won't make this better. Documents sent in to the House of Records, the Federal Bureau of Recordings and Manuscripts. Dates and names redacted from message as directed by the desk of the Attorney General. From the Dean of the University of Colorado at Denver. Our distinguished department chairs in our social science and history departments, Doc...
Name redacted.
Doc...
Name redacted.
Doc...
Name redacted.
And Mrs.
Name redacted.
Are thankful and appreciative thus far with the State Department's compliance with our various requests for post-dated recordings and information. We are, however, writing to inform the department that unless the internal dates
redacted
show as follows
redacted, Redacted. Redacted.
We will publish Dr.
Name redacted.
Postdoctorate work findings for peer review next month on the
Redacted. Redacted.
After an internal scan of the metadata, our third-party affiliate, Norman Jacobs Engineering, Inc., has validated our conclusions here at U of C. Apart from the appearance of conclusive evidence displaying otherwise, we will be forced to surmise, due to Dr.
Name redacted.
Postdoctoral thesis, that your department has been tampering with the metadata. NJE Inc., in conjunction with
redacted,
have specified over 4,200 instances wherein the metadata of the supposed dates are clearly tacked on. The metadata is lying. This smells of a cover-up. We formally request the metadata for the 94 days starting from
redacted.
As a means of both provocation and endorsement, we've asked for similar records from 16 government bodies globally. This postdoctoral work, led by
name redacted,
has the full support of the University of Colorado at Denver, and we will financially see this thesis through to its inevitable end. Thank you. Addendum. On a more personal note, from my vantage point, it behooves me, from my position at the university, to go further and to leave a breadcrumb trail for the media to sniff this thing out. It is abhorrent to think that after so much suffering that came in part due to this, and many others, government's hands at the beginning of the 21st century, that even now, nearly a generation after nuclear holocaust ravaged the world, that valuable information would be hidden from the public. Why are those dates changed? Why has the House of Records scrubbed an entire archive of records for 94 days? I repeat, how can you not have records for 94 days straight, 28 years ago? It is an impossibility. You are hiding data. You are hiding vital records. Do not be evil. Reveal them. Alexandra Keitel was a convert. It happened on the island. They took out the numbered man's lair. Lex was there, flying high above, watching the bombs fall. Bunker busters. Kill those things down there, those blasphemous mutations. A funny thing happened when the night sky lit up with the flames of that abominable island's descent into the abyss. A funny thing, indeed. Alexandra Keitel had sought all her adult life to find, examine, and protect the unseen creatures of this earth. She was a verifiable cryptozoologist by trade. Well, as verifiable as anyone could ever hope to be in that field. Yet, here she was, having seen with her own eyes myriad creatures. Here she was allowing, rooting for, their utter elimination from the face of the earth on that island. It was cryptozoological genocide, and she was the general ordering the gas. At first, this apparent contradiction didn't strike her. She was not privy to the cognitive dissonance exploding in her subpsyche. Days after the evisceration, she took a trip back to Uamaru's island. Just like she left, she returned to the island via helicopter drop-off, a small safe haven that she and Jennifer Dash had taken after escaping from 666's dungeon. She told her colleagues and herself that she was going merely to check up on the small island farming family, to make sure that none of the blasts affected them, that there was no residual evidence, even, of the explosions there on the neighboring island. This is what she told herself, but as Lex Keitel returned to Eden, the truth bubbled up. She wanted counsel. She wanted peace. It didn't take long for her to radio back home that she was going to stay a few extra days on the island, take a little R&R on the isolated paradise. It wasn't long after that that she threw her radio into the ocean. The oldest born boy of Aaron Uamaru, at just 16 years of age, tried mightily to impress Lex. He answered her beck and call, whispered jokes to her, and despite herself, Lex found that she was falling for this silly, brave, strong-willed, simply brilliant boy. 18 months later, Lex Keitel and Gabriel Uamaru welcomed the baby boy to the world, their firstborn. He was to be named Alex, after his mother, Alexander Uamaru. For fun, Lex started calling the infant Double A, and the nickname stuck. Double A was nearly walking now. Lex couldn't imagine a world without him. It, of course, wasn't planned, and Aaron Uamaru had harsh words for both Lex and his son.
The many welts on Gabriel's back proved to Lex that Aaron's boy received the far harsher treatment once the couple revealed to the family their lustful union. After Double A turned 3 months old, Aaron ordained Gabriel and Lex in wedded matrimony. Of course, it was a simple thing, but it brought so much joy to Lex. She could hardly see through her own eyes. She felt like she had to keep grounding herself mentally, lest her soul just pop right out of her body and float above the scenery to get a better view of it all. The day before the wedding, Aaron welcomed Lex alone into his hut. He'd been deteriorating in health pretty steadily for the last year or so, and he spent most of his time here in the hut, resting alone with his thoughts and God, as he would always say. Alexandra, how are you? I'm happy. A little tired, but happy. Do you remember when you came to the island the first time?
Of course.
Do you remember what you were like?
I was tired, scared, but happy to find you all. Happy to be away from the numbered man.
Do you remember what I saw that day?
Lex struggled to think of it. It seemed that all of Aaron's attention was on Jennifer that day. Jen had that way with people, kind of like Gabriel. Both of them have such magnetic personalities. Lex is perfectly likable. She knows as much, but she doesn't have that raw energy that attracts people innately to her.
Aaron, you saw Jen.
Yes, but why?
Why didn't I see you?
Lex felt embarrassed. She blushed and shrugged.
God told me that the one I was to look for, she'd wear her flaws on her skin. When I saw you, I saw this strong, multilingual, lively, intelligent, determined, mindful woman. I didn't see any vulnerability. There were no cracks in your armor.
But Jen did?
Yes.
So I assumed. God's words applied to her.
I thought in my heart she is the answer to much prayer. I thought she would be my son's bride. I knew. The helicopter came, but I knew. She had to return. That hasn't happened. Instead, I got you.
Lex fought the urge to be defensive. She bit her lip and held her stay.
Then you came back. Not her. You. But this time, you wore the face of a thousand.
What do you mean?
You returned confused, anxious, mad at yourself, maybe. But more importantly, doubting your parents, your lineage.
How do you...
Lex trailed off. She'd confided in Gabriel a thousand times over about her past, about her sulky mother, but never a word to Aaron. She thought that such things might bring condemnation. She wasn't sure there was room in the old man's theology for someone or something like her. But now, had Gabriel ratted her out to his pa?
Identity is the most important decision we make.
How is identity a decision? Isn't it just... I don't know, how we're made?
You come from a different place. When you destroyed that island, something in you broke. Because you felt like you betrayed your heritage.
You didn't, my child. You didn't.
God uses us all in his time. You came from where you came from for a reason. Do you think it was an accident that you ended up on that evil island? Of all the people in the world, a cryptozoologist is one of four outsiders to go there. That's well farther than coincidence.
Fate, Lex answered weakly.
More than fate. The puppeteer tosses us to and fro. But the trick of it is, you have to question your place. You have to look up at your strings in order to finally embrace who you are.
What are you telling me?
Whatever we are, we become more of that over time. God told me to tell you that.
He kissed Lex on the forehead and with a flick of the wrist invited her to leave him to rest up. The next day, Aaron Amaru, more sprightly than ever, validated Lex's relationship with Gabriel in front of the family and in front of God. Lex had pondered that conversation perpetually in the coming months.
Whatever we are,
Time and time again, she'd roll it over in her head, talking it over with Gabriel, trying to make some sense of it all. Then, just a few days before Jen came, while on the hill overlooking the entire island, with double A strapped to her back, Lex heard from God. Well, not exactly. She didn't hear words, but she had a vision. Well, not exactly. She didn't see anything per se. All the same, she envisioned it in her mind. Jennifer Dash would come back to the island as a refugee. This would be an opportunity. The opportunity. The world needed to hear what every inhabitant of this Edenic island already knew. The world had to know. The end was near. Very near. There existed in this world such a thing as common grace. This common grace from God fell like rain on both the good and the bad. Rain falls on everyone, without discrimination. Lex knew, because God told her so, that the common grace was running out. The world would soon shift. It would become something else, something apart from God's grace. It was spinning towards shadow. Lex didn't yet have words to describe the idea. It was to her something deeper than words. She'd need to find words, though. When she thought on this, Lilith Babbitt's Croatoan came to mind. Maybe that was the key, that word. Not the book itself, but the word. It was a key to describe, a key to explain. Lex remembered being tutored on the origins of the word Croatoan. It appeared once, engraved on a tree, the only remnant of the lost colony of Roanoke. This whole town of settlers in a pre-American colony disappeared without a trace. An urban legend persists that a curse was put on the town by an indigenous tribe living nearby. The legend implies that a demon god took orders from the curse and not only killed the settlers, but erased their souls, their entire existence. Death is what happens when you cease to live. Croatoan, according to this story, is what happens when your past, your present, your future are all taken away together. It's to never be. A fate worse than death. Croatoan, or something very near it, was about to gobble up the universe. And the final sign of its coming was the return of prodigal Jennifer Dash. And now that day had come. Jen was on her feet, sniffing around her boat, back on shore after doing something on the boat. Lex met up with Jen at the water's edge, right on the shoreline. Hey, Jen, Aaron sent me to tell you. Yeah? What? He says there's something for you, up on the mount.
The mount, overlooking the island?
Yep, the one Aaron took you to when you were first here.
Oh, okay. He says it's important and that you have to go now. Is he coming with?
No.
Are you? He said it was something for your eyes only.
Oh.
Right now? You know how he is with this sort of stuff. Mystical.
Okay.
Lex pointed the way. Just take this path through the woods and up. Straight shot. Confident this was to be the last time she'd see her, Lex lunged at Jen, hugging her fiercely.
It's good to see you.
Yeah. It's good to be here.
You know, it's not by accident.
Yeah. Jen agreed unconvincingly.
So why'd you come back, Lex?
You haven't told me yet.
How'd I end up with Gabriel?
It's just, he's so young. And, well, when you left this place, you said that they shouldn't have had kids at all.
And now, Lex couldn't resist showing her pearly whites as she smiled broadly.
Funny, isn't it? Go up to the mount. You'll hear my story sooner or later.
And off Jen went.
As soon as she was out of sight, Lex ran.
There wasn't much time.
She found Nates and Petra skinning coconuts with little Trinity.
Hey, guys, Aaron would like to have a word with you two.
Right now?
Petra asked. To Nates and Petra, Aaron was something of a mythic character. During their week's stay on this island, they'd heard hundreds of his stories. But to them, he just seemed to be an aloof old man, the stories of his grandeur outweighing his reality.
He's in his hut. Do you know the way?
Once they headed out, Lex gathered her son, her husband, and everything was set in motion.
A few quick, tearful goodbyes, bags packed, the die was cast. The world needed to be evangelized. It needed to know Croatoan was coming.
Hello,
Aaron said.
Hello,
said Nates.
Hi,
said Petra.
I'm glad you are both here. Are you enjoying your time on the island?
Yes, sir, we certainly are.
Good, good.
So, you like it here?
Oh, very much, Petra replied.
Jen balanced herself by grabbing a rock with her hands and pulling herself up the next cleft. The path up to the top of the mount was steeper than she remembered.
Are you learning?
Learning, sir?
Are you learning why you're here?
We're Jen's friends. She couldn't get here on her own, Nates answered.
So you don't think it's destiny that brought you here?
I don't believe in destiny, Nates said. It's just something we thought would be fun to do. For our friend.
This trip brought you closer. If you hadn't come with Jen, if you hadn't left Slovenia together, you would have broken up.
Nates, you'd fall deeper and deeper into depression. Petra, you'd seek comfort in the arms of other men. Wouldn't you?
Neither had an answer to Amaru's cutting words.
You've come to me at just the right time. I don't think it's an accident. At just this time. This moment.
Last lunge, and Jen was on top. On top of the island, on top of the world. She took a big gulp in. Having just re-upped on Balaam before coming, she was feeling zestier than she had in days. It was windy here, at the top. The breeze was strong. Jen had to keep her legs splayed apart just to keep her balance, to keep from being pushed over.
Petra, have you felt a little funny lately? Maybe a little sick in the mornings?
A little,
Petra admitted as she looked up at Nate and unconsciously stroked her belly.
You're pregnant,
Aaron declared. The sea was so blue, so clear. Jen could see for miles in every direction. Everything looked so small.
Today, I'm losing a son, a daughter, and a grandson.
The boat, it was moving. The anchor had been pulled up. The mainsail had been unfurled. Someone was playing house on the boat.
I believe God sent you three to me as a gift. A way for me to continue to share my love.
The boat! Lex. Lex was on the boat. She was pulling the anchor, steering it away. Lex was leaving on Jen's boat.
I'd like to adopt you both as my children. Would you like to stay here on this island and raise your son here with me and my family?
Jen bolted off the mount and ran, leaping like a gazelle towards the shore. Her eyes splattered her face with tears, but all her effort, all her vast wealth, could not save Jennifer Dash.
If she hits you, remember this. I let you off the dialogue. That was our deal. I didn't say anything about the water around me. You see, I'm trustworthy.
Her boat was gone, and, infinitely more importantly, so was her Balaam.
Whatever you are, you become more of that over time.
Hey, Solve the World is now on Google Play Music. If you're looking for a good podcatcher, somewhere to collect and listen to all your favorite podcasts, well, Google Play has just launched its podcast platform, so it might be the best place to listen from now on. So check us out on Google Play Music, and if you do listen there, or wherever you listen, be sure to write us a review. It would really help us out. Also, today's episode, just like every other episode, has all the sound effects and music used today listed on our show notes page. You can find that at DanteStack.com. That's DanteStack.com. And while you're there, tip jar. Tip jar. Come on, help me out. Tip jar.